Okay, so it's nice to be here at UCST, for those of you who read these books. So I'm going to be discussing work in progress with Joe, and the motivation for this, I think it's as simple as it gets. We'd like to find a non-perturbative formulation of four-dimensional physics, four-dimensional quantum gravity. And what I mean by that is that, you know, the four dimensions need to be larger than the internal dimensions, or in terms of energetics, the masses of all the towers of internal states, KK states, string states, D-brains, etc., need to be much higher than the curvature scale of the four dimensions. So why has that not happened? There are very useful formulations of specific backgrounds already within string theory and M theory. And at some level, it's been a technicality why it hasn't gotten down to four dimensions. But let me just quickly review the status of previous approaches before getting to ours. So we'll focus on ADS-CFT in this talk, but before that, there was a previous idea for a gauged gravity duality, the BFSS matrix theory, which involved looking at graviton scattering and decoupling everything, describing it completely using a quantum mechanics that could be associated with the low energy limit of a D0 brain system. So that gave an interesting framework for studying gravity in 11 dimensions. And then to compactify down to fewer dimensions, it was quickly realized that what you needed to do was dedualize, at least on the maximal supersymmetric toroidal type compactifications. So these D0 brains, when you T-dualize, become higher dimensional brains. And if you try to get down to four, you're on a T7 in this maximal Suzy case, and so you're trying to formulate gravitons with D7 brains. But seven brains have a large back reaction, and you can't consider a large N number of them. We'll be talking about seven brains for other reasons today. And so this was a sticking point for getting down to four dimensions in the matrix theory. In ADS-CFT, there are two ways you might think of to do it. The first one has a similar problem to the problem that I just mentioned. That is, if you consider trying to get to four dimensions, four large and the rest small dimensions, by considering the ADS-2 times S-2 Freund-Rubin type compactifications, which come along with an internal, say, Calabi-Yau manifold, which can be small, well, that sounds like a promising start. But again, the problem was that ADS-2 is quite subtle. There are infrared divergences as soon as you add energy. And so it wasn't possible to formulate things this way. Of course, it's also better to look for maximally symmetric four-dimensional spaces from the start, things like ADS or ultimately de Sitter and decaying de Sitter spaces. So let's look at ADS-4. Well, of course, there are lots of ADS-4 CFT-3 examples that are known, but they all have gigantic internal spaces. So they are based on Freund-Rubin-type compactifications, and I'm going to go through I'm going to bore you with the reasons why this ends up huge to start with, because our goal will be to instead obtain ADS-4 CFT-3 dual pairs in which the internal space can be actually small. So let's talk about Freund-Rubin compactifications of this sort. So with ADS-4, it's known how to formulate dual pairs involving M theory on F7 or orbifolds thereof, or going down to type 2A theory on the CP3, for example. But in all these kinds of cases, like with the ADS5 times S5 compactification that started off ADS-CFT, there's the size of the ADS ends up the same as the size of the internal dimensions. So these are not really four-dimensional. And the basic reason for that is that one is not playing off enough different terms in the equations of motion and finding these solutions. So in, say, the full 10 or 11 dimensions, if we start with that, we have, you know, Einstein's equations with curvature that includes both internal and four-dimensional curvature, and some source that comes in these Freund-Rubin things from basically from flux. And all these three contributions I just mentioned turn out to be of the same order in the solution, and that leads to this equivalence of the scales. So stop me if any of this is not clear. So that was in the full 10-dimensional or 11-dimensional description. Because we'll find it very useful to work in the four-dimensional effective theory, particularly when we get a good hierarchy, that'll be self-consistent. So let me belabor this point in that language. So let's start in 10 dimensions, say, with the Einstein curvature term, flux energy, and other ingredients that we'll talk about later. So we can compactify on six of these dimensions and reduce this 10-dimensional action to four dimensions. So the curvature term sits here, the flux term sits here, we're integrating over the internal dimensions. So you get a factor of, so let's just for illustrating this point, I'm going to take all sizes to be of the same orders and call it R, and I'll work in string units, keeping track of where the scales go. So the curvature term sits here, curvature scales like 1 over R squared, where R is the size. We have an overall factor of the volume and 1 over G string squared out front. And similarly, fluxes are quantized. So I wrote here, the flux quantum over Q. So F goes like Q over the volume R to the P of a P cycle if F is a P form flux. I chose a Ramone flux here. So that's where the dilaton scalings come from. So this is one way of writing the four-dimensional potential. If we go to Einstein frame, which is useful for moduli stabilization because then there's no scalar dependence in the curvature in four dimensions, this is what the potential looks like. And here's the curvature term, here's the flux term. And just as I said, in 10 or 11 dimensions, in stabilizing the moduli in these kinds of compactifications, you find that each of these terms contributes equally, and therefore that the curvature term in the descending from the extra-dimensional curvature scales the same as the resulting cosmological constant in four dimensions, and hence you get this equivalence between the two scales. So let's just belaboring this further, let's talk about 2A and CP3 with two kinds of flux. This is the kind of thing that's been studied recently in the excitement about Chern-Simons theories. So here, putting in all the factors that came from the convergent Einstein frame, et cetera. Here's the potential. There's two-form flux that descended in M-theory from a Kaluza-Klein circle. There's six-form flux over the whole thing. And here's the curvature term. So, the stabilization is in each of the two directions that I've listed here, the G-string and R, the size of the space, is a simple balancing of the negative term against the positive terms coming from fluxes. You can easily work out that there's such a solution of this potential energy. And just belabor this further by writing it in one more form. If you write this four-dimensional potential as m Planck squared times something, the something is the cosmological constant. And again, these two terms are scaling the same way in the solution, and so the 4D cosmological constant is of order 1 over R squared. Okay, so in this case, there's a nice field theory dual that is known for this solution, which can either be considered as a strongly coupled limit of a sequence of Chern-Simons theories, as has recently been discussed, or originally it was understood that these M2 brains come as an infrared limit of a gauge theory of D2 brains, and in this case with some other stuff. So, by the way, there's another large class of three-dimensional fixed points that come in a even simpler way, in some sense, than those Chern-Simons theories do. So it's worth mentioning that. This was, in fact, the first two-thirds of our project was working these out and finding that although they're very interesting, they don't give the hierarchy that we want. So I'll just spend a page on them, but I think it's worth describing them. In fact, I think Joe did in the talk recently here, so you can look at that too.
That was in the seminar before the program started.
Yeah. Oh, okay. But it's all online, right?
It's all
online. we spy on you from far away. So what are these theories? So take just a gauge theory in three dimensions. The classically the coupling is dimensionful, it runs strong as you go toward the IR. So I've written the inverse coupling and here's the classical bit. So as Applequist and others showed, and also in Kinesmatter people have showed, adding flavors to this, well, it has the obvious effect. It screens the gauge coupling. So if you look at a 3D gauge theory and compute the beta function, you find that the, you know, the inverse coupling has this classical piece plus a one loop piece that scales like some, you know, difference of flavors minus colors divided by the energy scale. That's the, you know, dimension of the effect. So if you define a dimensionless effective coupling by scaling through the energy, you see that as you go to the, toward the IR, you get a fixed point coupling if this delta N is large. So I only said the one loop term, I only wrote the one loop term here, and that becomes a good approximation either if you work at a large number of flavors with or without any supersymmetry, as Applequist and Hines shown. There's a huge discretion of these types of theories. Or if you work with supersymmetry, with enough supersymmetry, 3 dimensional n = 4, there are no extra terms. This is exact, and you can push it to strong coupling and see that this effect of, you know, stopping the strong running of the coupling by screening using flavors gives you a fixed point, you know, over a wide range of NF and NC flavor and color numbers. So, you know, these are realized, especially the supersymmetric ones are realized in a simple way in string theory and systems of D2s and D6s, maybe with orbifolds, dualized 2-2B to give Hanani-Witten type setups. And these are still either Freund-Rubin, or even in some cases we found they didn't even get to large radius at all. Yeah.
It's a little confusing that they're Freund-Rubin, because what you said is you take NF large and fixed NC.
No, that was in the non-supersymmetric case.
Okay, but in that case, they're not Freund-Rubin.
In that case, they're just small radius. Yeah.
So the vector like large N never gives you large radius.
The vector like large N. No, I mean those are weak. Those are weakly coupled, so they're not large radius for a clear reason. But you might have thought that so the Tift coupling here is, you know, multiplying this guy by NC, so you can have NC over delta N be quite large, and even then that's not enough to always make it large radius, although, you know, we could play with that and get that to happen with strong enough interactions among the flavors, actually. But in all those cases it was still Freund-Rubin, it was still had a huge internal space. But I think it's good to keep in mind that this simple class of CFTs exists as part of the story of ADS4 CFT3. This is hopefully already clear, but just to remind you, I've focused on the ADS4 case. There's, of course, the classic ADS5 times S5, where the same thing is true, large space. So in stabilizing moduli, the negative terms in the potential are always key, and there's kind of the limiting factor in the process. So far in these Freund-Rubin things, we use positive curvature, which, you know, dimensionally reduced gives negative potential energy. But other sources of negative energy that are used in moduli stabilization include orientifold planes, which have negative tension, or, you know, in supergravity, we know that there are negative contributions from the minus 3W squared. So in the presence of non-perturbative effects, that can contribute the necessary negative terms as well. And in fact, is well known, coming from the other direction, not starting from a field theory construction per se, there's a huge amount of evidence that we can construct ADS or de Sitter vacua times a small internal space. And, you know, this, as soon as it was realized, clearly suggested that there should exist a rich set of dual CFT3s. But these were not a priori set up as a near horizon limit of any brain system, so it wasn't immediately obvious how to interpret it that way. But you can work on the gravity side and read off a large, you know, amount of information about these theories. I'll just list one thing here. If you look at the entropy, you find, you know, which scales like the radius squared in Planck units in 4 dimensions. You find interesting, very intriguing formulas that go like, you know, flux quantum numbers, say in KKLT, GKP. They're flux quantum numbers to some power that's, you know, generally larger than 2, some Betti number. And, you know, that plus the behavior of these theories out on their moduli space and so on gives a lot of clues as to what, you know, properties these theories have, but it still has not been possible to, you know, invert that to get the theory itself. Our techniques seem, yeah.
You're talking about the entropy of what?
Of black holes. And
you're saying you're imagining black holes in these
ADS4s? ADS4, or you can consider, you know, the TT correlator, whatever your favorite way of counting degrees of freedom is. They all scale like, you know, like L squared. So you can just ask yourself, you know, so this is to be compared with the N squared of the ADS5 times S5 case. So there's this rich set of, you know, data having to do with these formulas that is begging for an explanation. So we don't have one for, say, these KKLT type vacua, although it's intriguing that the ingredients that we'll use in a somewhat simpler construction are part of the KKLT story. So that we hope to be able to interpret eventually. So our plan, given this background, which I belabored, the plan is actually quite simple given what I've said. We will start from some known ADS-CFT dual pair, which is Freund-Rubin, and we will work on the gravity side using our experience with moduli stabilization to add ingredients which eliminate this curvature energy that, when balanced against the four-dimensional curvature, gave us this non-hierarchical behavior. If we add ingredients which cancel or nearly cancel that term, then we would get and we stabilize the space, then we will obtain an ADS4 with a hierarchy. So we want to do that without losing touch with what's going on the field theory side of this construction. So whatever we added here, we want to at least be able to interpret qualitatively on the field theory side. So that'll be the strategy, and we're still in the middle of it, but we have a lot to, we're pretty far along. So there's a lot of things that don't compete with the curvature energy, which I won't bother to list. So let me just say what the natural thing that does.
Can I ask a qualitative question?
Yeah.
At the beginning, two transparencies ago, you mentioned this N to the B scaling.
Yeah.
When B is bigger than 2, that kind of scaling doesn't obviously come out of deep brain theories with just the standard open strings. I mean, it seems like you'd need large representations to get N to a high power.
Yeah.
Is that somehow part of your construction, or is that?
No. As I said, we're not to GKP yet. We're going to do a simpler thing.
Okay. But so you're getting things that are hierarchical, but where it's N squared-ish, or less than N squared.
Let's see. Where are we on the entropy? I think we're probably still in squared-ish. Well, you'll see. Well, first of all, you know, but you'll see. But keep asking questions. We have an NF too. We have NFs as well. So let's get there. I'm going too slowly though. So we find what seems to be a natural entrance to this question in terms of seven brain energies. So first I'll give just the sort of naive energetics of seven brains, meaning, you know, their tension times the volume of the cycle that they wrap. So they wrap four cycles, again, just doing a one scale setup for purposes of illustration. The potential energy of a seven brain then, with all the conversion factors out front, is the tension times the volume of the four cycle. So let's compare that to curvature energy with the same factors pulled out. And you see they scale the same if we consider seven brains whose tension in string units scales like 1 over g squared. So in other words, the PQ type of seven brains, not just D7 brains. If you consider those, then the two compete, at least naively. Now, of course, seven brains are these codimension two objects with large back reaction transverse to them, and so one needs to treat them in a less naive way than this, but it's known how to do that using F-theory. So there one takes the axio-dilaton of type 2b, which is sourced by the seven brains and undergoes monodromies around them, and temporarily views the tau formed from them as the complex structure of a torus fibered over a base. So this describes type 2b on this base B with seven brains sitting on it. And the sound brain sits at points where the torus degenerates, about which there is general SL2Z monodromy. So one can geometrize the whole problem in this nice way, pointed out by Botha in the 90s. So our plan has gotten a little more specific. The thing we're going to add are these seven brains, and whatever else we need to stabilize. And so what is this on the field theory side? Well, seven brains added to ADS-CFT are, you know, somewhat familiar. They are flavor brains. But because we are talking about the PQ brains in general, there's a twist. They are generally going to give us both electric and magnetic flavors. Now, this also is somewhat familiar. If you look at what was going on in New Jersey in the 90s, you'll see a lot of work on taking the Seiberg-Witten solution of n equals 2 super Young mills and showing that which is a well-defined field theory, and showing that there are places in its parameter space in which there are simultaneously light electric and magnetic degrees of freedom. So this was first done by Argyris, Douglas, and others in the SUN version of Seiberg-Witten, but one that's more appropriate to our application is one that was done by Argyris, Plesser, Seiberg-Witten, where they took the case with some number of hypermultiplets. So if you recall Seiberg-Witten theory, there's in just the pure Yang-Mills theory, there's a monopole and dion point. If you add hypermultiplets, there's a point also where quarks become light. And they showed that you can change the mass matrix to move one point to the other. So you can have a place where quarks become light at the monopole point too, for example. So this is good because it means that the theory is well-defined. It's just this n equals 2 super Yang-Mills theory. Somewhere in its parameter space, you have this very interesting infrared behavior where electric and magnetic fields become simultaneously light. Furthermore, this was quickly understood to come out of brain constructions of three brains and seven brains, three brains probing seven brains of a general PQ sort.
Were all U1-gauge theories at the point where they had the simultaneous matter, or did they have non-abelian examples?
In this case, it's on, you know, it's the usual SU. What I've drawn here is SU2.
But is it a point on the Coulomb branch with three U1s?
It's a point. It's all U1. I mean, that was part of the story. But of course, for our case, we'll have an NC, and it'll be a more elaborate version of this. But the basic mechanism for stuff becoming light is not the NC of Argyris Douglas per se. It's the moving of the three brain toward the seven brain, which is the mass matrix for the flavors. But there's nothing stopping you from generalizing this to SUNC. They just did it in SU2 for...
I guess what I'm asking is, will your three brains be on the Coulomb branch, or will it really be an ADS with seven brains in it?
Well, both are true. I mean, seven flavor brains appear on the gravity side.
Will the three brains actually be sitting... Will they be geometrized as ADS, or will you have a Coulomb branch solution in ADS with seven brains in it?
Well, so, you know, it'll be... The three brains will have been turned into flux, right? So there will be NC units of five-form flux as usual. You can go on the Coulomb branch by introducing explicit three brains, but without doing that, the seven brains are there as flavor brains. They're space-filling brains on the ADS-4.
Is there still a constraint that you can't have too many seven brains?
Yes.
Less than 24 or something?
Well, it depends on the geometry. I'll be trying to get to that in some detail. Okay, so the techniques for this are basically known, and it's this beautiful story of F-theory. So what you do is you take this torus, the axiodilaton. Here's an equation for a torus, realizes a degree 6 hypersurface in some weighted projective space with weights 2, 3, and 1. I'm sure is quite familiar. And it's, you know, well known how to formulate this over some Kähler base. I like to use the crutch of a sigma model description of this kind of geometry. So we'll discuss the appropriate sigma model, which is a 2-2 linear sigma model with gauge U1 invariances introduced by Witten in the 90s, whose target space is this geometry. So the seven brains live at the locus where the discriminant of this torus vanishes. For example, a D brain is where tau goes off to I infinity. And so one can just write down this geometry, which has in it the constraints of how many subgrains there are, given by the places where this discriminant. Okay, so, but we want to build up from something we know. So, you know, we know ADS-CFT on S5, on T11, on YPQs and LABCs, which we're still in the process of learning about. And so that's not a, these are not Kähler spaces. So, but they are realized as essentially as hop vibrations over nice Kähler base spaces. So let me introduce one more element of this, which is that. So we'll consider some five-dimensional space Y, which is one of the familiar internal spaces of ADS CFT. For example, the sphere, the S5, topologically, and but use its structure as a hop vibration, a circle vibration over some Kähler base. So in the case of S5, the base, the simplest version of this is that the base is CP2. It can also be a weighted projective space, which we'll also use. And for T11, the base is CP1 squared, and similarly for these other cases that are topologically S2 times S3. Okay, the sort of modern way to say this is that this is this base B with quote-unquote metrics flux turned on, or Kaluza-Klein flux, which is equal to the Kähler form of the base, or up to some constant. So this is a useful description when the fiber is small, and in our stabilization mechanism, the fiber will end up small. So following the strategy that I outlined, we will start from this space, add 7 brains, and insist that they either fully cancel or almost cancel the negative potential energy coming from the positive curvature energy of the base. And then we will be able to use F-theory techniques to describe that. And then we add back in the fiber, which introduces the usual metric flux type of energy. So the potential energy with the usual factors pulled out will be that metric flux energy, the suppressed curvature energy, so this epsilon is going to be small. This is a case where we don't fully cancel the curvature energy, I should say. And then we'll have other fluxes, like 5-form flux and 1-form or 3-form flux, depending on the example. So if you manage to do this, stabilizing all the other degrees of freedom, like the positions of the subgrains and so on, which sit in the coefficients of this polynomial that I wrote down, and that includes the string coupling, then starting from this, one finds a stable minimum with the right properties that you can easily work out that it's stabilized among these remaining directions, the overall size of the base B, which I've labeled R, the size of the fiber RF, and the size of some transverse circle that we introduced to get down to 4 dimensions. Okay, so here this thing has a stable minimum with a hierarchy between RF, R, and RADS. And depending on whether we're using 1 or 3-form flux, it does not or does have a hierarchy in the final circle direction. So what I need to show you is how to do this job of nearly canceling the curvature energy to implement the stabilization mechanism, and also to address the other moduli. But a second way of doing it, which is in a similar spirit, is to use the subgrains to fully cancel the curvature energy. This is the more familiar case of F-theory, where one considers the whole thing to be a Ricci flat Calabi-Yau manifold, and then the problematic agreement between the curvature of the internal space and of the 4 dimensions is removed, but one then needs some other negative term in the potential to do the stabilization. That can come from Orienta folds, and again, if one makes that work, one finds a stabilization with a hierarchy.
In these cases, the examples will be sporadic in the sense that there will not be an end that you can dial off.
No, they'll be more like DGKT. They will be like
7 brains. Somehow you find just in the families.
Yeah, the integers come into the shape of the space, as I'll get to. Yeah. if you're, I mean, you know this if you've never thought about weighted projective spaces or YPQ type spaces and so on. They all have the same topology, but the shape is.
This is assuming that the energy is additive in the way we consider. Assuming, but if they're not exactly additive and there's small corrections, then the actual.
It might be sporadic. Yeah.
It might be sporadic. Yeah. Probably. Expected.
That's what you're expecting.
Might be sporadic, but.
Well, I think what we have right now among these candidate examples is delta Q over W factor, which is basically a power law. It's not a good hierarchy; it's just a power law hierarchy. But it's also true that with other ingredients, you could get something more like a Busel-Polchinski type additional term that makes it a better hierarchy more sporadically.
We're not really searching anything quite like the KKLT landscape.
No, we're not. We're not. No, this is.
It's not quite that.
It's not that sporadic. It's only similar in that it has some of the same ingredients, the seven brains, and so on. Okay, so one thing that you might immediately worry about is the following. So, if you're used to thinking about flavored brains in ADS-CFT, say just adding a kind of probe flavor seven brain on S5, that there's this nice story that although it's wrapping some topologically trivial cycle, some S4 in the S5, and therefore can slip off, that tachyonic mode is an allowed tachyon. And the reason for that is pretty clear. It's related to the fact that the size of the internal space is so huge, and so the tachyon for moving off is mild, small mass squared. And so you might immediately worry that, okay, if we're going to be able to shrink this internal space, then doesn't that make immediately for a very tachyonic seven brain slip off mode, which immediately ruins the whole thing. But this is actually not true in the stabilization shape that we end up in. It has to do with the fact that, you can see it immediately from the F theory setup, basically, that the seven brain moduli that there are in F theory sit in these polynomial coefficients in the equation for the torus that we wrote down. And say in the Calabi-Yau case, just for to be specific, where we imagine using oriented fold to end up stabilizing, these are flat directions in the potential at before smaller corrections are taken into account. They're not classically massive at the level that you would naively guess if all you did was shrink this round sphere. And similarly, in the case where we nearly cancel the curvature energy, they are nearly flat, and they're not nearly as tachyonic as such a picture would suggest. Okay, let's be a little more specific. Let's, for now, and I'll get to other cases later, look for examples where the Y space I mentioned is just an S5 topologically. So I said this is a hop vibration over CP2. So let me first show you that in the language of this linear sigma model. So let's start from the CPN model, CP2 model, which is a 2-2 supersymmetric two-dimensional sigma model with chiral multiplets that correspond to three projective coordinates U1, U2, and U3, which are related by an overall rescaling, which you can break up into a phase, a U1 symmetry, and an overall real size rescaling, which is enforced in these sigma models by the corresponding D term. So there's a D term that looks like this in the CP2 model. So if you look at the D term, you see that, of course, setting it to zero by itself without imposing this U1 projection gives you S5. And so then projecting with the U1 gives you CP2. And this U1 direction is the fiber of the hot vibration over CP2. So you can write down an explicit metric for this, where this fiber size would be one or order one in the round sphere, as was done, for example, by Gibbons and Pope years ago. And so what we'll do again is put seven brains on the CP2 base of this, then add back in the fiber by basically undoing this U1 gauge symmetry, and see where we get. Okay, so we want a T2 vibration over CP2. So this gauge linear signal model includes the T2 that I described before, realized as a hypersurface in the weighted projective space 2, 3, 1, in these three directions that we talked about before. And then in addition, we have the CP2 model, but now with, you know, the extra directions associated with the torus also needing to be assigned charges under that corresponding U1 symmetry. And the defining polynomial for the torus, setting this to zero, is enforced by a Lagrange multiplier field P, which has its own charge consistent with the gauge invariance of the superpotential of these models. So the condition for having a Calabi-Yau is that the degree equals the sum of the weights, which in this linear signal model language is just that the total sum of charges vanishes. And this also goes along with there being anomaly-free global U1 times U1R symmetries, which are the ones that one expects to match on to those required by 2-2 superconformal invariance in the infrared of this model. The D term has this FI parameter, which runs in general according to this beta function, and the Calabi-Yau condition is the condition that this not run. And you know, the degree of the defining polynomial is given in terms of the charges that I listed in this way. And so using that, you can show that the Calabi-Yau condition imposes, in this case, that the degree of the full defining polynomial is 18, and correspondingly, the degree of the discriminant, whose zeros give the seven brains, is 36. So there, for CP2, there are 36 seven brains. So this is the analog of the 24 that Gary was asking about. And by the way, this result we have checked agrees with the naive energetics, this business of tension times volume of four cycle in the CP2 case, just as it does in the CP1 case. But we'd still like to understand if it's true more generally. Okay, so if we take that route of totally canceling the curvature energy, then we need some other negative term in the potential to have a chance of stabilizing. And our current strategy involves an oriental fold 5 plane, which we can make to be mutually supersymmetric with these seven brains, an additional world volume flux, which has another tadpole, which requires some other brains to compensate it. And altogether, if this works, we're still in the process of developing this, we get a nice stabilization mechanism from the type of terms that I mentioned before. The fiber curvature comes in here. This is now the negative term, which is coming from an oriental fold, arranged in a way that I can explain if anyone wants to see it. But you know, this is scaling like an O5 energy. It's negative because O planes have negative energy. There's still flux energy on the sphere and this world volume flux on the seven brains. I have neglected the dilaton here for reasons that I'll explain. We have in mind a simple way of stabilizing the dilaton by itself using these combinations of seven brains, which force the dilaton to be at some order one value locally, and then varying it introduces large KK scale gradients in the geometry. We still need to address the seven brain moduli which exist, those in those polynomials that I wrote down.
I just want to try and understand. So the racking usually non-local seven rings on this P2.
Right.
And also world volume flux to make it make sense?
The world volume flux we add to as part of the stabilization mechanism, and then you have to add other, this gives a tadpole for some fields that we can cancel using five brains that end on the seven brains in a certain way. It's one of these K-theory-like things. I can actually explain it more simple. Well, I personally like to think about it in a T-dual description. So CP2 is S5 is a hot vibration over CP2, as we discussed. So it has this metric flux on the CP2. You can T-dualize that to get CP2 times S1 with H-flux. Okay, and what's going on is then the seven brains become six brains. Let's think of a D7 brain for just for this purpose. And it's oriented in such a way that there's H flux on the six brain. Now you know HFlux on a 6 brain has a tadpole for 4 that requires cancellation by 4 brains ending on it. So that's what I was mumbling here, is that there's some extra ingredients that compensate this tadpole, but which can be arranged not to change the potential stabilization mechanism.
Is it S1F the fiber circle?
S1F is the fiber circle, right.
Is that topologically trivial?
Right, so that's the original side version of the anomaly that I'm talking about. So basically we're adding some flux and sourcing it with some other brain.
I mean there's an anomaly, right? You can't wrap 7 lengths from P2 without turning on this kind of flux. That's probably what you're saying. It's not spinning, right? So you have to turn on something.
You're talking about the Friedland anomaly?
Yeah. I mean, it's inconsistent to just wrap 7 lanes on P2. So you have to turn on some wall volume flux, it's not in general.
But there's a flux from the fiber. I mean, isn't that enough? Because you're really wrapping what it's size.
You might have to shift the quantization by half.
Yeah, it should be Q.
But if you're taking large Qs, it shouldn't matter.
Okay, well, we should think about this comment.
I mean, it's spin sheet, so you can do it, but it's not spinning.
Well, okay, you can tell me what you're talking about in the language of the usual F-theory construction sometime, because I'm not really following what happens to, you know, what is wrong with it. You're saying something's wrong with this model, basically.
There's a global model. That's small.
Sorry, F theory on the elliptic vibration over P2 does just make sense. It automatically does whatever you need to do. It's a 6-dimensional n equals 1 theory. But when you modify it, you might have to be careful.
Modify it in which way?
That's not even obvious. It makes sense on some. I mean, it could be global normally, even in that case.
The 6D n equals 1 theory? Well, you can put that on a torus and get a 4D n equals 2 theory that's totally non anomalous, so it'd be a shock. It's a perturbative quality from that communication.
No, well,
it is.
The difference between the 6D theory and the 4D theory.
Yeah, no,
it doesn't have to exist in the 42.
I think the 60 theory is also not normal.
Yeah, I would like you to explain the problem at the level of the single model, but
just wrapping brains on P2 is problematic. That's the mystery. Maybe there's a way out of it for non-local brains.
Well, right. I think.
Yeah,
they're wrapped on. That's right. So these are you know, this is a usual.
Oh, you're taking elliptic vibration over the P2?
Yeah. Over the P2, yeah. Okay, so this was. Oh, you wanted to wrap it on the whole thing? I'm sorry.
Brains wrapped on P2.
Okay, but there is an issue with this flux that we add, which we can, you know, describe in terms of these tadpoles that we then need to cancel and so on. So this is the fine print on this model. So if it makes sense, then we get a nice minimum in this case with a hierarchy of scales, as I've indicated here, for reasons, you know, qualitatively that I mentioned before. Once we cancel the basic negative curvature energy and replace it by something milder, we automatically end up with a hierarchy.
That becomes from Q, really. If you go to large Q, it fixed everything else.
In this case, yeah, it comes from, well, you need both large NC and large Q, yeah, in this case. I want to get to the ones which are a little bit simpler with just a residual curvature energy, with a residual curvature energy remaining, rather than fully canceling it using orientifolds. But just for a brief look at what the field theory might come from, you know, this is saying that there's some brain construction with you know, NCD3s at the center of it, you know, all of this on a circle, with 7 brains piercing the S5 at various places, and, you know, an O5 plane, which gives modifies the gauge theory and so on. And so it's some rather complicated generalization, it seems, of the kind of D3, D7 type brain construction for these theories with electric and magnetic matter that we talked about before. And so there's, you know, reasonable hope of getting straight what this theory is. I don't think we've completely lost track of the field theory side as we did this on the gravity side. Okay, so now let me generalize to these cases, which where we don't quite cancel the curvature energy, we won't need to add oriental folds in this funny way. But we will need to generalize our base, and there are several ways to do this that we are developing. One is to simply generalize the base from CP2 to a weighted projective space. So it's a similar gauge linear model to what I wrote down before, but now with the 1-1-1 that used to sit here being replaced by three weights, W1, W2, and W3. And again, a defining polynomial that gives us a torus fibered over this. And, you know, again, there's a beta function for the running of the size of the whole WP2, which is the sum of these linear supermodel charges. In this case, the sum of the weights minus basically something to do with the degree of the polynomial. Okay. Now, if we threw away the seven brains and we just talked about W weighted projective space alone, then its beta function would be in the same normalization that I'm using above, would be the sum of these weights, right? But if we, so that means that if we then pick our degree of the polynomial, our other charges, in such a way that the total sum of charges is much smaller than the sum of the weights by themselves, then, you know, we will almost cancel the beta function, we will almost cancel the curvature energy. And in terms of the 4D potential, since the beta function scales like curvature, what this is saying is that we get this kind of non-sporadic looking hierarchy where you have this difference, you know, the epsilon that I talked about, the amount by which we are failing to cancel curvature energy is given by, you know, this difference, which for Calabi-Yau would just be zero, divided by the beta function that you would have for CP2 itself.
Is it obvious you can write down transverse defining equations with these mirrored weights as you've got very large weights?
Yeah, so we've checked that there are examples that do it, but it's completely, you don't. So you're allowed some singularities where seven brains intersect, but
allowed singularities.
Yeah, I mean, it's true that weighted projective spaces strongly restrict the polynomials that you can write down, but you know, that's part of the it's part of what we're doing. Okay, so one really fun thing here is, again, another tachyonic issue that you might have thought was there and turns out not to be. In this case, closed string tachyons. So if you've ever played with weighted projective spaces, you know that they're full of singularities. So it's like CP2, except now the scaling invariance that you impose on the three coordinates is weighted by these three weights. And so if you look at a special choice for this weighting lambda, that's say e to the 2 pi I over W1, and if W2 and W3 are relatively co-prime, say with W1, then and you work near U2 and U3 equals zero, well, this lambda doesn't act on U1 at all, but it does act on the other two, and so it gives you locally a C2 mod Z W3 orbifold fix point. And this is generally non-supersymmetric. It has, if we were doing string theory on this by itself, it would have twisted tachyons, which condense and smooth it out and change the shape from where we thought we were sitting. But that's wrong for two reasons. One is that, we need to include the seven brains, and the action of, you know, this projection includes actions on the other coordinates in our linear sigma model. And, you know, the whole thing can just be set up to be totally supersymmetric in the Calabi-Yau case, or almost so in these other cases where we have some residual curvature. And also, it's a red herring in a simpler sense, in some sense, which is that at the end of the day, we're going to add back in the fiber circle, which I talked about, which is the phase part of this projection. And so we're just not going to be projecting by this in the full model. So we certainly don't introduce twisted tachyons.
Transpectrum? What do you mean by that?
What do I mean by what?
So you have some space positive C1, and you're talking about the twisted sentence.
So if you just considered, you know, string theory on the space, it would be time dependent, it would crunch, at large radius, you can calculate things as usual, and at this point, you would find an orbifold fixed point with the spectrum that, you know, one calculates using the usual methods, and it includes tachyons. Is that what you're asking?
I mean, I'm confused about what you mean by large radius. There's no radius.
Oh, sure. This is a weighted projective space. It has a, think about the D term if you want, and the linear model, or just the, you know, the overall size of the space. So you can work at large ambient radius, and then locally there are these orbifold fixed points whose spectrum you know. But anyway, this is a red herring for us because there aren't, for two reasons. Right, so if you just did string theory on this without either, I mean, if you did string theory on this with no other ingredients, it would change as a function of time. Actually, you would need other ingredients because of, you know, the initial value problem, but so you add some energy density and it'll try and shrink, like a closed cosmology, right? But, you know, we're doing something else with this. We have other terms and we're stabilizing the potential. The point of this slide is not about the stabilization mechanism, which I talked about earlier. It's about the red herring of these closed string tachyons. So, so for the reasons I tried to explain, we can nearly cancel, but not fully cancel, this beta function. We expect to be able to mock that up in this four-dimensional potential by this, you know, small coefficient multiplying the positive curvature term, the negative term from positive curvature, which has almost been canceled. And again, if you just work through the, find the minimum of this potential, one exists with a hierarchy. The fiber ends up smaller than the base, which ends up much smaller than the ADS radius. And in this case, if we add one form flux on this transverse circle that I mentioned, then we don't get a full hierarchy in that direction. So maybe F is for 5 instead of 4. There was a vote for frustration at some point, but maybe we're past that. However, you know, what's going on in that regard here is that the one-form flux that's just kind of added as a kludge to address this final circle it's one-form flux that pushes hard out on that size of that circle. If instead one considered a case where there was topology to support the three-form flux, say, in a similar way on the circle times some, you know, internal two-cycle, like in the S2 times S3 examples, then you get a hierarchy in all dimensions. So F is for 4 or 5, I would say. So that, among many other things, is a motivation for studying these more general internal spaces, which have topology S2 times S3. So these are known as, in general, as LABC spaces or YPQs. So just quickly, I'll go through how we can seem to make a rather general construction starting.
Can I ask a question on the previous thing? So now you've given a stabilized ADS4 thing, and there is this number, I guess, Q, that lets you generate a hierarchy to some extent.
Well, this is a different mechanism, by the way. This Q we don't care to make large at all. This Q is not. Okay. I didn't write out the scalings here, but here it's more like the normal ADS-CFT. There's a, you know, these terms are balancing so that first of all, there's some balancing and it's NC that's driving.
My question was going to be the ADS cosmological constant lets you infer some central charge of the CFT, roughly.
Yeah.
And how does that scale with your?
Yeah, I've looked at that on this and didn't get anything looking particularly nice, but I forget. That was the question you asked before.
So it's worse than Q squared. I mean, it is something that would be confusing from the field theory point of view.
I'll check it again. I don't want to say anything, but I think what Joe was saying before is that the ingredients here are some NC and then some flavor brains.
Right. And then, on the field theory side, it looks like you should.
So in the field theory side, but these Argyris Douglas-like theories are subtle, so maybe there's something more happening. This will be, of course, an interesting thing to study, but it's also always true in ADS-CFT that one side or the other is in control, so I don't, you know, we'll do as much as we can. So let's start. Let's do something rather general. So I'm going to start from a Calabi-Yau cone, so a non-compact Calabi-Yau, whose cross section, whose five-dimensional cross section, will be the internal space Y that we're interested in. You can use one of these Gage-Larson models to describe a non-compact space, Calabi-Yau space, very easily. Take four, this is three complex dimensions. So take four variables whose sum of charges vanishes. That gives you three independent integers. That's the L, that's the ABC of the Ls. So this is just a general Calabi-Yau cone. And then, if we mod out by an additional 2-2-U1, we'll pick out a four-dimensional base of the five-dimensional cross-section of this thing. And we can add seven brains before to the whole thing, and in particular to the to the whole cone and also to the base, using the techniques I mentioned before. And then undo the phase rotation to get back the fiber, to get back to the five-dimensional cross-section. And on the full cone, this is giving us the brain construction for the field theory, while on the five-dimensional space, this L now, we're getting the stabilization, we're getting the internal space of the ADS CFT construction. So we've looked at this also in this kind of naive energetics point of view on the YPQs, and this is still very much in progress, but this energetics in which we take the tension energy times the volume of the cycles wrapped with the seven brains and add that up, if that is correct, it gives us an epsilon here, which has a nice Q over P scaling, if you know how the YPQs work. These are two integers of metric flux that thread through linear combinations of the two cycles in the base. And if, as has happened in the CP type models, the naive energetics is actually accurate, we still need to do the F theory on this, then here there's also a nice power law non-sporadic hierarchy of this energy scale epsilon, suppression factor epsilon that multiplies the curvature energy. Yeah?
I think you can write the metric in that form for the YPQs. I mean, the isometry for the YPQ is a non-compact U1. It's not a circle.
There are two cases, right? There are cases where it is and cases where it isn't.
All the YPQs are regular, so it's not Gansheim.
In the papers they delineate two cases, one which is regular and one which is irregular. So
The only regular one is T11. The only regular Sasaki-Einstein of topology S2 cross S3 is T11.
Well, okay, you're saying something very different from what is described in the papers.
The theorem. If it's the YPQs, maybe some of them are quasi regular, but.
And now only sort of only for T11 also.
What?
Yeah,
only
for
T11
also.
No. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's T11. There's T11, C2. Yes. Right.
This was in P squared minus 3 Q squared N squared.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe it's quasi-regular.
Which means what?
There's sort of, it's not the base. There's singularities sort of in the fiber.
That's true.
The fiber is not constant. It can change. So it's not you can write the metric like that, but B4 is an orbifold, not a...
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
That's fine.
That's true, yeah. So that's, in fact, I think that's related to the fact that these cycles are one spaces and so on, but... right. Okay, so as I say, this is looking very promising, but... we're still nervous about anything that's not using this as sort of F theory formulation where we know that all the back reaction is correctly included. So that's on the agenda. Okay, I'm already a little bit late, so let me just, I already said this about the string coupling. So other directions to discuss are the seven brain moduli, which are in these F and G polynomials and basically don't run at leading order in all these constructions. And so we expect our potential to be rather flat. So that's one of the things we're still making sure of. You can also worry about all sorts of other metric modes, but aside from the Kähler metric deformations that we've talked about, those are have KK scale masses, at least according to the usual Calabi-Yau analysis, and small generalizations of it in this epsilon-tic version. Another interesting thing about F theory is that rather generally you can take a weak coupling limit where seven brains are now boiled down to just O7 planes, which encode the PQ stuff, and D7 brains. Those examples don't have this mechanism of forcing the dilaton to be at a fixed value. So it's just slightly harder to stabilize, and we haven't finished that. But the nice thing about this kind of case would be that it would be purely electric on the field theory side. So we are planning to do that. Okay, we want to understand better many things about this. This is, you know, we're still doing this. So the supersymmetry breaking scale, maybe non-perturbative issues. This thing I keep saying about whether the naive energetics is generally reliable. Given what we said, we have a qualitative statement about what the field theory contains. It has these magnetic and electric flavors, but you know, a more detailed analysis would be welcome. I just said this. And in the future, if this all goes as we expect, there's a lot to think about. So one thing you might ask is, if we had this residual positive curvature, which gave us a negative, you know, energy ADS vacuum, by the same token, we could slightly over-cancel the curvature energy. And that would be a good model building element for de Sitter, because if you've ever worked on that, you know that, you know, you need to either make the initial positive, so you need three terms to stabilize in each direction, about weak coupling at least to get a positive vacuum energy under control. And so you either need the second negative term to be large or the first positive term to be tunably small. And so here we seem to have a mechanism for making a first term that is tunably small. So we would then maybe add or antifolds and so on to get the rest. There, of course, we can't just be happy with allowed tachyons. There need to be none. So the GKP-KKLT vacua are tempting as ever. Of course, they have lots of rich properties that are more complicated than the examples that I just showed. But you know, they are based on F theory. They have a positively curved base with seven brains, and perhaps we can view them through this lens once we're done. Also, you know, there's this interesting development of possible connections between ADS-CFT and condensed matter, where a lot of interesting papers come out sort of saying, well, we assume that I have some ADS-4 with no scalars that matter or whatever, for example, to look for a Fermi surface. And so maybe, you know, so the landscape strongly suggests that such things are available, but it'd be nice to have cases, even just from this point of view, for which you know both sides. So this might be another application. So let me stop there.
Don? Just suppose you wanted to do the same thing, but you wanted an ADS-5 with a small internal space.
Yeah, we can do that. So F really can be 5. So I could, we could have just removed that circle. I mean,
and again, you use seven brains in this situation.
Exactly, yeah. Use seven brains on the base of the hot vibration of S5 over CP2.
So this idea that seven brains are the things you use to cancel the curvature is more or less independent of the final dimension you want, or it just works for 4 and 5 for some reason?
I suspect it's harder to do as you go up. Just from previous experience with moduli stabilization, it's a little bit counterintuitive maybe, but you need enough independent forces, and the more internal dimensions you have, the easier that is. That's actually why it was easier to start in even higher dimensions, because there are just more things.
So you did the 6 and 7 dimensional cases as well, or is it?
I suspect there are if you start in the supercritical string, but I don't think there are likely to be in this case. Just because, you know, what we're doing here is not really, I mean, we have our own fun little stabilization mechanisms that are maybe new, but basically what we're doing is taking, you know, mechanisms that already exist involving a balance between positive curvature and other stuff, just making the positive curvature part smaller. So given that we don't have, you know, ADS-8 or whatever already, never mind whether the internal S2 is large, we can think about it, but that hasn't been an immediate output of this. Do you have an ulterior motive for asking that? I mean,
maybe S5 I thought was a more interesting case to use to study four-dimensional gauge theories. But.
Well, that's true. On the other hand, for four-dimensional quantum gravity, maybe we want to get down to 4.
I also like ADS-4. I have no ulterior motive for 6 and 7, is my point.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah.
I wanted to, this is tangential for your talk, but this is the right audience to ask about it. So you mentioned this Hopf instability.
I did. In fact, this is hilarious because I haven't talked to neither Joe nor Garrett about it.
So this hot instability really bothers me also, and I was wondering what the general philosophy is of the people who know about this instability, including you and Joe and Gary. I mean, if the original case was that there was a circle that if it shrank in an instanton solution would have a tachyon, and from that you were able to generate a roll instanton that makes the instability. But you might be suspicious then that, and this is an overstatement, but any non-supersymmetric ADS, you have to find every possible such instanton, and if it's there, the thing decays instantly. What's the moral that you draw from that? I mean, do you think that these instabilities are only there when there's a Schwarz-like circle? Or would you really worry that non-supersymmetric ADS doesn't exist in some deep sense unless you regulate it or if you cut off?
I don't know any examples of non-supersymmetric ADS, any examples, for the reasons that you said. I mean, you know, non-supersymmetric things find some way to decay, and it's conformal to decay immediately. So, you know, the case that we said you can put a cutoff on and talk about as an effective theory for some period of, you put a UV cutoff.
Right, and then it's essentially irrelevant because right. The decay is so slow.
Right.
So if you compactify it, it's irrelevant, but if you don't, it's...
But this, I mean, this shows, I mean, to get a duality, you need the coupling to be much larger than one. And field theories are couplings much larger than one. Just from field theory points of view, can find ways to decay. For example, in QED, you could make a positron electron pair out of a vacuum, and its potential energy, its negative potential energy would exceed its positive kinetic, you know, the vacuum would collapse. And this seems pretty generic in non-supersymmetric strongly coupled field theories.
So if you, I mean, you presumably have examples here of ADS4. You think they would have...
Well, some of them should be supersymmetric. So I mentioned the supersymmetric.
Supersymmetric ones, of course. But do you think that all the non-supersymmetric ones, even if we don't know the analog of the Schwarz circle and their geometry, have rapid decay channels?
I mean, I think you have to find the instanton. It's hard to say before finding the instanton.
Yeah, well, what's interesting is it wouldn't apply to de Sitter because the volume divergence you find in anti-de Sitter that made the instanton amplitude very large wouldn't be there in de Sitter. So it's strange because from the quantum gravity point of view, it says anti de Sitter is much worse than de Sitter.
Well, that's good. That's a reason that the vacuum energy is positive. you just explained the positive CC.
I mean, your de Sitter example, that last thing you drew. Does that mean that the gauge theory, which somehow realizes DSCFT? Somehow give this a DSCFT interpretation?
Well, I think it would embed into whatever the correct framework is for DS or decaying DS.
It won't be conformal, obviously, because it's not. I mean,
yeah, although there are these ideas that where you slice the sitter in various ways and find evidence for a dual description, and in each of those, one finds that basically you can partially do it. You're left over with lower dimensional gravity. So most recently, the Singolani's been talking about it. Is that character, or just more prosaically, if you slice the sitter-static patch like you would RS, you get, like in Randall syndrome, you have a warped throat that is, itself a field theory, but then it's cut off and coupled to gravity in lower dimensions. So, we don't have a complete framework for formulating these cosmological spacetimes, so there are these ideas. And I think it's very interesting that this would embed into that. I'm not sure it helps us understand the framework any better, but maybe it would. I mean, it's sort of like with ADS-CFT, you could have developed the GKPW dictionary in the absence of knowing that the dual was the N equals 4 theory with all its specific properties. So this is more like the analog of the knowing that it's the N equals 4 theory. And both are very important, so.
Just to follow up on that, this would be a 3+1 dimensional field theory of some sort. I mean, it would have a Minkowski signature. A dual of de Sitter.
Well, 2+1, but yeah.
Well, it's a 2, but it would have Minkowski's signature. It wouldn't be a Euclidean theory or something.
Well, the one that Andreas and Davitano and I looked at, it was Lorentzian. We took the static. This Randall syndrome-like way of slicing de Sitter is time is just time and it's fine. In Lenny's, as you know very well, it's Euclidean.
But the thing you would be led to from this field theory would naturally have a time-like. Time would be time.
That's how I like to think about it, but I think I'm missing.
Well, I'm just wondering if this prejudices you to the right answer, because you would naturally be able to have a Minkowski time and...
Well, you can't, oh, this theory certainly naturally admits Minkowski time.
And that was my question.
Oh, I see what you're asking, yes.
That's the field theory, so you can choose, right? I mean,
right, but I guess you're saying that there might be...
Well, the natural duals typically pick a signature. For instance, you would expect a DSCFT or something else, like you would have, they would be non-unitary. So the analytic continuation to Minkowski time would be problematic.
So you're saying the fact that these exist as unitary theories is some information about...
That's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, that's...
By the same token, it looks like you can get flat space, right? I mean, if you could tune it to have zero.
Well, except, you know, we've added in a... Maybe that's... Yeah, I guess we're...
Supersymmetry or something.
I guess you say if we just added nothing else.
But, I mean, isn't that striking?
I mean, yes, that is striking. I would say I hadn't considered that.
So you can get flat space in a way different from just the F-theory construction on a Calabi-Yau, which gets flat space.
No, but what he's saying is now we have...
You're the dual.
No, we don't. No, we don't, because we have the flux. So in order to have the dual, well, at least the way we were doing it, you know, we had this NC units of five-form flux, which corresponded to the three brains in the brain construction. So that adds energy. So if we do nothing but fully cancel the curvature energy but include the three brains, then what we would have is this potential. Let me just find one of the potentials I wrote. You know, we would have this. We would not have this term. Oh, I should also say we would have this term, and we would have this term, and it would run away to large radius. Nonetheless, it's a good comment. It's worth thinking about whether there's a way to...
I'll stabilize it at zero.
At zero, yeah. Right, but I think the reason it didn't come to mind is that, you know, that was one of the few sort of, well, seemingly predictive things about the landscape, was that although we can stabilize to get, you know, ADS or DS with these discrete small separations, from the point of view of stabilizing moduli, it's not at all clear that you can get exactly zero, except in some, you know, ridiculously supersymmetric background. Nonetheless, it's a good question, so I should think about it more.
Thank you again.